You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Broadway, Broadway, in all of its glory, we all have a memory, we all have a story. Was there an understudy, or did the show stop? Did you see Barbara before she shot to the top? Join us as we revel in a reverie, it's my Broadway memory. Not only are these next two guests friends, I'm absolutely honored to have performed with them multiple times. They are some of the kindest, most giving performers and creators I've ever worked with. Literally, like, collaborators with a capital C, and just like they create the safest space. And I think when I first met them, I was so intimidated just because they're so cool, but. Like, they're literally just the best. So the Skivvies are Lauren Molina and Nick Searley. They are singer, actor, musicians performing stripped down arrangements of eclectic covers and eccentric originals. Not only is the music stripped down to cello, ukulele, glockenspiel, melodica, but the Skivvies literally stripped down to their underwear to perform.
Nominated for Show of the Year for the 2015 Mac Award, the Wall Street Journal calls them smart, sophisticated, ingenious. And Out Magazine says the Skivvies have managed to carve out a niche that we never knew needed to exist. Part Weird Al parody and part sexy burlesque, an unusual explosion of satire and sultry. People Magazine named them the Skivvies, the most People Magazine named the Skivvies the most playful performers in the most talked about bodies of 2014 issue of Sports Illustrated. And Sports Illustrated named them favorite new band. The New York Times calls them a hot musical comedy duo specializing in unexpected arrangements, incongruous mashups, and of course, highly toned displays of skin.
Welcome, Lauren Molina and Nick Searley of the Skivvies. Hi! Wearing the masks. Oh,
they brought their masks, too.
You told them to enter the room with masks.
Dawn Katz just commented. Dawn is from is a drama mama from who frequents at Florida State Thespian, so I know that she has performed.
Yay!
We would have been there together this year.
I know.
I love both of your masks, too.
Thank you. They're Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
You guys made by Michael Buchanan.
Before we even start, something that you guys did recently, and it's a year ago, more than a year ago already, was the actor instrumentalist Charlie Brown. And I flew out to Cincinnati to go see it. It was in the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. And it was one of the best things I had. I mean, you remember after the show, I was sobbing uncontrollably because it was so ingenious, so amazing. And what you guys did was so brilliant. Do you want to talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. Sure. So, I did the actor musician Sweeney Todd back in 2005, the John Doyle. And when I was doing that, Nick and I were chatting and he was like, what's another show that could work really well using instruments and a small ensemble cast? And he came up with Charlie Brown, and we just, chatted about it.
It was literally like 14 or 15 years ago.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so then cut to Nick is at the Cincinnati Playhouse doing, why don't you just tell him? Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah. And take it away. Yeah. Hand off.
I was doing Little Shop there, and the... We were trying to concoct a way to come back to the Playhouse in the Park. And the artistic director said, oh, and I also loved working with that director, Bill Fennelly. And so the artistic director said to me at the opening night and was like, we want to figure out a way to get you back. And he was like, if you have any ideas, just feel free to let me know. And I was like, I've had this idea for 14 years or whatever it was then. And I would love to throw it on your desk. And he followed up. Nobody ever follows up. And he followed up like 3 weeks later and was like, I really want to talk to you about that actor musician Charlie Brown thing you brought up to me, because, and he was like, you know, that checks a lot of our mission statement boxes, multi-generational, they have to have programming, blah, blah. So they gave us a workshop right after that, and the rest just kind of fell in place. It was kind of one of those things where it was like, normally you work really hard for nothing to happen. And this was just like, hey, I got this idea. And then it kind of got, it was kind of an easier pitch. Like the elevator pitch was kind of easy for him. It fit his boxes.
Lucky to do so. And Nick, we played siblings, Linus and Lucy. And so, you know, it was really cool. It was like a toy box of instruments exploded on stage. And it was very, very sweet and special. And I feel like, you know, the gentleness of the show is something that we don't often get in these like really big produced commercial musicals these days. And, you know, just having the song Happiness at the end really was such a beautiful send off. And the simplicity, we had this really cool set where swings came down. And so we were swinging while playing our ukuleles or guitars or whatever. And it was, it was like, I still think about it because we're trying to bring it back to New York now. Or not back to New York. Well, yeah, back to New York to make the revival. So, you know, I just keep thinking about how this show will make people feel. It's like a hug, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think once we can figure out a way to get butts in seats, once we can figure out a way to hug, right, we will give you the hug. And a hug.
Yeah, I want to see that production so bad. When all the press was coming out about it, I was like, oh, all these great shows happen all around the country. And, you know, we don't get to see everything until they come back to New York or to New York.
It was nice to get to do that at Cincinnati because they have such a good reputation for the John Doyle stuff and kind of nurturing actor musicians and knowing how to technically handle it. So it was kind of, I don't think we could have gotten to do it at a better out of town place because of the way they took care. I mean, there are like 85 instruments. I mean, that includes weird percussive things, but there's a lot of instruments to be taken care of and they really took care of it.
It's amazing.
It looked like you were taken care of. And we have a comment on the side. I don't know if it came up before, but Kathy Guide, I don't know her last name, but she says it was a brilliant production. And it was amazing. So this is how it goes. This is the game. And I guess Brian will start first. He has his binder out. Basically, it doesn't really matter. What we like to do is we like to pick a playbill at random from our collection. But if you have a pile and want to pick up random, you have something, you were thinking about it in the shower and want to just talk about that memory, go for it. We do not care. It's just about memories. Who cares?
Celebrating. Yeah.
Yes.
I picked a binder that's very recent. So let's reminisce probably about like the past year. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. Was it here? No. Was it here?
No.
Yeah. No, it was like in between those two. It was that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is that? I can't see.
What is that?
That's
the inheritance.
Inheritance. Wow. Okay. Inheritance. Which time? Because there were a couple times I saw this. This was really
FM. Yeah, I saw like six playbills in that binder.
Okay. So this was October 2nd, 2019. And I think, yeah. This
I love
was,
Nick's face.
I'm what? Such a theater nerd, and I'm in awe that you organize it and date it.
I date it all, but I keep the ticket stubs too.
That's incredible.
So I do remember seeing. So the first time I saw this, I got to see part one in the West End back in 2018 when I was visiting a friend who was studying abroad. And I only got to see part one because I already had tickets to a show that was happening during part two. It just didn't work out scheduling wise. So
it was
like,
probably Wicked.
No, it was the closing performance of Heathers, actually, in the West End, which I was really excited for. Carrie Hope Fletcher was Veronica. Anyways, so I didn't get a chance to see part two out there. So then when it, you know, of course, I was like, it's definitely going to come to New York. It's brilliant. But seeing it in New York was just so, it just had that extra layer of this is a New York story and it's a little more timely here. I mean, you know, the theaters in the West End are a little bigger and I guess the audiences to me were a little more, I don't know if stifled is the right way to put it, but a little less, they were bawling their eyes out in New York. They weren't doing that in the West End. So this was a day that I was able to go back and see part one again here in New York. And honestly, I just thought it was brilliant. Here, let's show some pictures. Let's see. Did anybody else see this one?
I saw it.
Yeah. Did you see both parts?
Sadly, I missed the second part and I really, really feel guilty about it.
Oh my God.
I was planning to see it when I got back from doing cabaret this spring, but.
Yeah. Honestly, I heard reading it is also really, really emotional, but.
I mean, the end of the first part is very special. And, I mean, do you know what happens in it? Did you see it, Nick?
I want to read it.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil anything for listeners or anything, but it's really, really a special way. And if you do read it, you could totally just like picture the way that it came into the theater. We have a comment from Remy. Love The Inheritance, but being in the lobby before the show and intermission was very difficult as a gay man with extreme face blindness.
It's like
there were a
like
lot of gay men that watched that were there in the audience and on stage.
Wait,
that's true.
That's so funny. Remy saw you in the bathroom. That's funny.
Were you in the men's bathroom at The Inheritance?
No, that's a joke, obviously. But I was literally like, cool.
I was like, I don't remember that, but that happens funny. A lot. I forget things.
I also want to talk about the beautiful artwork on this logo.
Yeah.
I mean, they totally changed it from when they came from the West End, but this is like, it's got that mosaic feel to it.
I love community. The colors. I love that
color.
And also,
beautiful.
And also the photography is Evan Zimmerman from Murphy Made. Evan Zimmerman is an incredible photographer. I think we're the same age, but he's an incredible photographer. And this was, I'm so glad that his work was showcased in such a way because he's one of the best people in the world. But, I remember him posting about it and it's very exciting to, you know, that how photography was showcased in that way for key art and stuff like that.
Yeah. Who wants to go next?
Who Nick wants to go?
Or Lauren?
I'll go.
Lauren has the sec. I just have things written down.
Okay. So I have a box that's like put up in a way that I got down and I literally was just like going through and I just wanted to make a small stack of top 30 to put through, but I must share this story because it is one of my favorite stories of all time. So I went to Cap 21 the summer after my freshman year at Michigan, where I wasn't a musical theater major yet. And I took the musical theater summer course there.
Oh.
So that was in what year was that? There's my play. Why isn't my playbill telling me? Anyway, so one of my assignments was to go see a show, 99, yes. Wait, I just got the, okay. 99. Yes. I graduated in 98. I was like, what year am I? I literally like just lost track of what year it was. And this ages me, everyone. 1999. Okay. So I went to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch at the Jane Street Theater.
The original production.
It was the original production. I had seen it with John Cameron Mitchell, but then I saw it again with Michael Cerveris, and I wrote a paper on it. And I got a B plus. I got a B plus.
Where did you fall short?
What went wrong?
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. So I wrote about Michael Cerveris's performance because we were specifically supposed to be talking about, you know, theater things and the performance aspects. And then when I later in life made my Broadway debut with Michael Cerveris, he did a cabaret with me at the Duplex with Nick. Aww. He was there. And I read this to him on stage at the Duplex.
The whole thing.
but let me just.
That's the spark notes.
I'll give you. Yeah. So here we go. Tonight, I enjoyed an exciting performance of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. This rock musical captivated the audience with a unique alternative sound. Hedwig, played by Michael Cerveris, had an amazing voice, similar to the lead singer in the band Radiohead. He belted, screamed, and yet had a contrasting, beautiful falsetto. And here's where I got an underlined good, even though I still got a fucking B plus. Even though the music called for a loud yelling sound, I hardly ever noticed tension in Cerveris's body or throat. I watched every breath expand his entire torso, and he just seemed to open his mouth and release the sound.
That you knew exactly what to say.
That's crazy, because that's how I review the skivvy is every time I describe.
Wait, where are those reviews? Hang on.
Yeah, where were those quotes in the bio that I read?
It was Grindr. Yeah, it was Grindr.
Right. And you know, Kevin Cahoon, who I became friends with later in life, as well.
Wow.
Who was Yitzhak?
Oh yeah. This was Lisa Datz. But yes, I know. She performed with the Skivvies in LA. But I also saw it with Miriam Shore, who I'm also obsessed with. But anyway, so Lomo, that's one of my favorites.
Wow. You would be a great Yitzhak.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I would like to do it sometime.
What
yes,
theater was
you.
It at?
Yeah.
What theater was it at?
Jane Street, right?
Oh, the Jane Street.
The Jane Street.
Now it's a bar, restaurant, hotel, right? No.
Yeah. Is it
still
open?
It's like a bar.
Yeah.
Nothing is the anymore, Jane honey.
did you happen to see the revival in 2013?
Oh, you mean this one?
That one. What were like some of the differences that you saw in like the, you know, audience reaction and like your own like environmental, like being such a small audience, I'm sure the first time compared to on Broadway?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it lost a lot of it felt just like a commercial beefed up production,
okay. But
it like acknowledged that at the beginning. And so you're kind of in for it. It felt like more like a overly produced rock concert to me. But I still cried and felt, actually, I went to this and Lena Hall got me, some standing room tickets for cheap, because it was a really nice, it was like nice of her that it was like sold out a lot. And, I ended up like, I had a drink before the show and then I was like standing there and something about like the second act, I like nearly fainted. I got so lightheaded. I was like taken by the music and I was like, all of a sudden, oh no. And I went down. And I had to, and I love Hedwig. And so I went back and I saw it again. I saw a few productions. I love Hedwig, you guys. So, wow. So I had to like, yeah, at this specific performance, I had to like sit down with my head for like 15 minutes before I could get up. My blood sugar was low, you guys. And so I was like in the bathroom and I could hear it and I was like, oh, lift up your hands. And I was like, yes.
Well, I'm glad that you're alive. I'm glad.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. That's amazing. Wait, I don't know if I told you this, but when I saw Company in the West End, speaking of fainting while seeing shows, when I saw Company in the West End, in the Gielgud Theater, there's no center aisle. And I was right in the center. And in the middle of the show, the woman directly to my right, like literally sharing the armrest, she starts to like be a little weird in her seat and she goes, excuse me, I'm not feeling well, and gets up and starts to go in front of everyone in the middle of the show to leave, and she just face plants. I know. And then they like pulled her into the aisle and like were like opening her, she was out cold, opening her eyes, like shining a flash. So I'm glad that wasn't you. I'm glad that you were
No, I mean, remember, Nick, do you remember at Charlie Brown when that person?
Oh, yes. Like, no, it wasn't nearly Charlie Brown. It was Little Shop, because you were in the audience.
It was Little Shop. Oh my God. See, Cincinnati Playhouse. It's all coming back.
You were in the audience, not on stage. So it was Little Shop.
Did Audrey live in the audience?
No, I wasn't the Audrey to Nick Seymour. I did a different production of Little Shop at the Cleveland Playhouse. He was at the Cincinnati Playhouse. I understand the confusion.
At the same time? No, not at the same time. That's amazing.
No, it was like a year
Nick, do you want to go?
Sure. Here's my playbill.
Oh, I saw that.
You get that out.
It's a really good show. That's the crazy. I don't keep my playbills, which is probably like taboo in this company. I throw them out. I did once make a huge thing for my wall on my playbills, and it was actually, I remember the centerpiece of it was Debbie Does Dallas from the Jane Street Theater. So that's what I saw at the Jane Street Theater, starring Sherry Renee Scott. It was really, I actually loved it. But my story, my playbill memory is my mom used to take me to New York every Martin Luther King weekend in January for like 3 years of my high school. And one of those times we came to New York, I wanted to see Sideshow so bad, the original. And it was closing, and it posted closing. And I told my mom, I was like, she wanted to see The Lion King, whatever. There was like huge musicals that year. Scarlet Pimpernel, Ragtime. She wanted to see like the big, huge spectaculars. And I was like, I really want to see Sideshow. And so she was like, I'm not going to go unless you give that to me as a gift. I don't want to buy those tickets. And I was like, okay, I'll, Merry Christmas. I bought two tickets. So, and we went to see it. It happened to be, and I don't know how I missed this, it was the closing performance of the original Sideshow. Wow. So my 17, 16 year old, however old I was, gay heart just like exploded, because like, it was one of those moments. I'm from Ohio, so I had never seen anything like it, where the entire cast comes out, sits on those bleachers, and then the entire audience like just stands up and applauds. And I'm like, wow, does everyone always just get like standing ovations for walking on the stage? And so I remember sitting there with my mom, and the end of act one happens, and they sing, Who Will Love Me As I Am? Right? I Will Never Leave You? Oh, crap. I think it's Who Will Love Me As I Am.
They sound so familiar to me.
if you should be asking Lauren Molina, who we helped her craft a very special review for at Florida State Thespians.
Lauren, will never leave you.
No, do you remember your sideshow for Florida State Thespians? Your sideshow review. Your when you were critiquing Sideshow.
Oh, I understand now. Yes. I didn't know. I thought, for some reason, I thought you were talking about I Perform Sideshow or something like that. But no, yes, at Florida State Thespians, which is a big Florida competition, I was there with Nick and Michael, and we were asked to adjudicate a performance of a high school where there were actual twins playing the Sideshow twins.
Oh my God.
Actual twins.
Now I have questions already.
Not fair.
I want to know, were they offer only or did they have to audition? Like, also, were there other people who were seniors that year who wanted to do like, I don't know, Dolly or Mame, and they just didn't stand a chance because they were like, we're going to fucking do Sideshow for the twins?
Yeah.
Question.
I mean,
also, those two women that I'm talking about played the bearded lady and the fortune teller.
Yes, yeah, it's true, and they were fierce. I remember
they were amazing. Like, I was okay. Like, next year, if they're juniors, you do Mame. So the end of my story for Sideshow is that at intermission, I looked over at my mom during "Who Will Love Me As I Am." I think that was the song, and she was a mess. I'd never seen my mom openly just like become emotionally wrecked in a show, especially like that, ever in my life. And I had to give her a hug. I had to be like, are you okay? And she was like, this was so moving. And she was like, I just feel like, oh, that's what it was. It was the end of the show, because the last line is freak. They call them freaks. And she goes, I guess I just feel like a freak sometime. And she said that, and I hugged her. And it was so sweet to me. I mean, I was just like, oh my God, she was so moved by it. And then in the audience, or in the lobby, the next, like right after that, you know, Henry Krieger and Bill Russell and those, we don't know them. We didn't know them then. She walks right up to Henry Krieger and shakes his hand and says, this was one of the best nights in the theater I've ever had. And she hugged him. And it was just like a side of my mom I'd never seen before, but Sideshow did that.
And you said that'll be $150.
So I sent her a Venmo request.
Wow.
It was really awesome. And that's why that show, I mean, I love that show, especially the original, but like it holds such a huge place in my heart because it was such a thing I had to drag her to. And then, because I was so obsessed with the music and those girls, and it was a night to remember.
And you guys, and the Skivvies has an incredible relationship with Alice. Did your mom see Alice perform with the Skivvies? And
yes,
was that like a nice three?
She came to the show that Alice played the drums on New York State of Mind and did a New York medley. And it was really awesome. Yes, of course, it was like a full circle moment, but the even cooler full circle moment, and this is like not a Playbill memory, but it kind of connects to this whole like Sideshow thing, is that Bill Russell came to my college showcase and put me in one of the shows. And I became friendly, like very friendly with him, as like friends do. And fast forward to my wedding in 2012, and he was our ordained minister. So Bill, who wrote Sideshow, also married my husband and I.
I love it. Sideshow. That's what my Broadway memory is about. It doesn't necessarily, it doesn't have anything to do with the Playbill. It just has to do with that moment that you will never, ever forget. You know what I mean? Like Lauren, I've spoken about when I knocked on the stage door of the Eugene O'Neill being like, I'm a theater student from out of town. Can I get a tour backstage? And I told you this before, and I told you the story, and I remembered a dresser gave me a tour backstage, and it was a woman with long gray hair, and you're like, oh, that's Pat. You know what I mean? Like you had a relationship with her. I didn't. I was just this high schooler that had flown up and seen you do Sweeney Todd, and my memory is like being brought on one of my first Broadway stages, given Michael Service's guitar pick and a signed poster from the cast. Like, crazy. That's my memory. And so Nick, having that ordained, like Bill as your ordained minister, like that's really important. That's what this show is about. That's what Broadway is about to me.
Michael, do you have a Playbill you want to share tonight?
I feel like I've shared a few different memories, so I'm just gonna like do it really fast. But this is one of my like 9 binders, but I'm going to do.
Excited to see what it is.
It's Forbidden Broadway at the 47th Street Theater. With look at the signatures too.
Wow.
So I guess that was 2005. I think
was
that
was like 2005. One of the last incarnations before this most recent?
Yeah. Wow. I think that there was one more, but this was 47th Street Theater. And I remember okay. There's this slip. I don't know if we know him.
What's the name?
Oh yeah. Craig Laurie.
I know Craig Laurie. He has a Brussels Griffin.
He does. Yeah.
So that's who I saw in the show. But I saw it. It doesn't say the date in this one. Wait, it might. I don't know. But all right, this my binder wants to say hi. Okay, so we have. What am I doing? We have Ron. Okay, Megan Lewis, Ron Vomer, Jason Mills, Jeannie Montana, who I photographed before. Oh my god, this is great. Okay. So, and one of my notes from my mom watching the show was like, show the headshots a little longer. So I hope you're happy, Sarah. But yeah, I mean,
what else was playing at the time?
What else was playing at the time was
2005 was Sweeney Todd.
2005 was Sweeney. Yeah. So, saw,
look, I got it right here.
Hey!
I love that artwork.
All Shook Up, Avenue Q, Beauty and the Beast, Doubt, Fiddler, Dirty Rotten, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Glengarry, Hairspray, Jackie Mason, Freshly Squeezed, Lennon, Primo, On Golden Pond, Moving Out, Mamma Mia, Rent, Spamalot, Spelling Bee, Steel Magnolia, Sweet Charity, Constant Wife, Glass Menagerie, Light in the Piazza, Lion King, Mambo Kings, Phantom, Pillow Man producers, Virginia Woolf, Wicked. So it wasn't, Sweeney wasn't on Broadway yet.
I saw so many of those. 2005, was it early 2005?
Yes.
What?
2005 was, we opened Sweeney in August or September.
Okay. So you were 2006 for the Tonys and all that?
Yeah.
This is crazy. I literally have a Fire Island share with this person. It's Ben Rimmelauer. And it says...
another BPN podcaster.
And it says, who's another BPN podcaster. Ben Rimmelauer's love of Lapone led to a professional relationship with the star. That's hysterical.
Wait, you said Light in the Piazza, and I just happened to have this one pop out. I saw this with Nick Searle.
At the Goodman.
At the Goodman Theater, where I later worked doing Candide and Wonderful Town. But this, I have a funny story with Nick Searle. It's 2004. We were on tour getting our equity cards together. Go ahead.
And the cast was different. That out-of-town tryout was a different, like, to
Celia, Keenan Bolger.
Celia and Wayne Wilcox was the guy.
Oh, my gosh, right.
Wayne was?
Wayne was Matthew Morrison.
And then it went to Sundance, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what when I heard this story, I heard Celia talk about it once on a podcast. Then they brought it back to New York and she was replaced for that one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kelly O'Hara was the role in the ensemble that featured.
Like, that's crazy.
That's nuts.
I actually didn't even know that. That's amazing.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. That's great. See, there's always I just recently started watching Every Little Step, the Chorus Line documentary.
Oh yeah, that's great.
I have weird things like I didn't watch like The Search for Elle Woods or like Grease, You're the One That I Want, because I was so in love with Broadway that I was like, I know all this stuff. I don't need to watch it on TV.
You don't need the boot camps.
Yeah. So I, you know, but that was just my like teenage, like silly little self. But what did that have to do with Light in the Piazza? That's okay. We'll figure that out.
No,
it was just a memory that they saw it together at the Goodman.
You were listing off all the shows from 2005 and Light in the Piazza came, you said it. And I was just looking down at my giant pile.
No. I was trying to think of why I said that about Every Little Step. I think I just had like a slight diversion that made no sense, and that's okay. Now I'm all sweaty.
Wait, Lauren, pick another one.
Look at you.
Okay. Do you guys want to play a game? Because we only have 10 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I picked one.
Never heard of it.
Never. Heard I didn't of watch it last week on my TV.
What's it about?
I'm not sure. A star? It's about a guy on a star? I don't know.
Huh. A guy on a star. Star mites.
At this point in the live stream event, we played Broadway-themed memory games. While these games are tons of fun, they're best enjoyed in the video format of our episode. If you'd like to see the game portion of this episode, visit My Broadway Memory on YouTube or Facebook. Now back to My Broadway Memory.
Speed playbills.
Tell me to stop.
Yes, ready? Stop.
Okay, got it.
Beetlejuice.
Oh, my edible kicked in right at the right place for this one.
Okay, go. And
so did my martini.
Stop. I've just been told to stop. Oh.
Cabaret. Who was in that when you
saw? Who did you see as Sally?
Who was your cast?
That let's see. This one specifically was Herr Schultz was played by Philip Hoffman, who I just did Cabaret with.
Oh wow! Cool.
Lulu was Katrina Yockey.
Oh.
Fräulein Schneider was Christy Dale Sanders, but the big ones are Alan Cumming, and Sally was Emma Stone.
Nice. Ooh,
beautiful!
I've never seen that production.
Yeah, it was great. All right, keep going.
One more.
Okay. Tell me to stop.
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 I can't see it.
Was it
one of the best? One of the best plays I've ever seen in my life.
It was amazing.
Honestly, like game changing, so moving. So, like what theater should be. Holds the mirror up to the audience, terrifies you, moves you, makes you think.
We got 2 minutes. Think.
All right.
What am I?
Do another one. Just do another one.
I want to show you really quick. I have this picture framed. Oh my God, can you see it? I have this
picture framed.
I took that picture of Katrina Lenk.
Oh wow.
Backstage of Indecent, and it's framed. It's the second to last performance of the show as well. Anyway, sorry. I thought that was a cool. That's my memory.
That is cool. Oh wait, I found this one.
That's cool.
Yay.
Where's B Street? Where's
Sacramento.
That's Sacramento. Cool. Mm-hmm. Nick, how many times have you done Buyer and Seller?
Eight
amazing
productions.
It's incredible.
I feel like, you know, I'm waiting for I love that.
Me too.
I feel like in the era of love that. So it's the Sutton Foster. It's the Marathon. Sutton Foster catalog.
Oh yeah. Now we Shrek, Anything Goes.
Little Women.
What Scarlet. No, Scarlet. What? No, Les Mis. What is that?
What is it?
Is that like an open night photo booth?
That's us from that was.
This is the first night I met Michael Kushner.
Where is that?
That was our first hangout. That was, you were my date because Wes Taylor couldn't come to a film festival that Save Me Please was in.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't Save Me Please. It was
It was a short.
It was an even shorter short.
Yeah. And we went to this like opening premiere contest party thing that was really like, yeah. I was like, I don't feel cool enough to be here.
It was so fun. We had such a good time. We got to
wrap up. But before we do, we want to announce next week's guest. Next week, we've got Ellen Marie Marsh and Constance Shulman.
They're going to do Convos with Connie. They're going to revive Convos with Connie.
Beautiful. Nice. Beautiful. And we changed our time a little bit this week because at 8 o'clock, one of our producers from Broadway Podcast Network, Alan Seals, has a live show at 8 o'clock. And that is called, it's his 100th episode called Rebuilding Broadway. Michael, do you want to tell everybody what that's about?
Yep. It's a roundtable discussion designed to bring to light the inequality and racist behavior towards Black people and people of color in the theater and wider entertainment. I know what I'm going to be doing at 8 o'clock. I'm going to be tuning in to Alan's 100th episode.
Yourself a drink, go pop some popcorn and come back at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Guys, where can we find you on social media? I see clearly Searly and the Skivvies NYC and Lomo.
You can find me at Lomo212 on Instagram and, you can find me on Facebook at Lauren Lena, and I'm at all the Skivvy things as well. Very easy to find.
Yes. Beautiful. We love you. Thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate it.
I can't wait to see you again soon.
Yeah. See you soon.
Thank you guys.
Thanks friends. Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.